Well, good evening.
Good evening.
We're going to be, we're about halfway through just at the halfway mark of the precepts. The sixth and the seventh are so much alike. They're just sort of turn from one side to the other. The sixth one is no speaking of past mistakes. And the seventh one is no praise or blame, praising self and or blaming others. No dwelling on past mistakes is also not speaking of others' faults. So in both cases, there's a kind of a switching back and forth about self and other. But the sixth one is the one that we've come to tonight, no speaking of past mistakes, or no dwelling on past mistakes, which I think is an important point. It's not that we don't have regrets. It's not that we don't need to apologize. It's just that it's important to not get obsessed by something that happened in the past, that at this point, can't be touched anymore, is gone. So it's very easy to, especially in relationships, to not get beyond that blame. You did this, and I can't forgive you, no matter what. And yet life is already flowing on and flowing on. And whether we like it or not, we're flowing with it. So it's counterproductive to hold on to the past in that way. So if we dwell in the present, then whatever happened in the past isn't going to be our problem. Our only challenge is to make this time our best time, doing what we can to make it what it wants to be, live it as it is living us in the moment. This is Buddha life. Our past mistakes are, we could cherish in a way, as teachers for us, but let them be with us as long as they can be teachers for us. But dwelling on them, not such a good idea. If it's about not speaking of others' faults, then it's about right speech again. How we use our ability to speak, and how we relate with each other through speech. Bodhidharma's version of this, one of them is, in the midst of the flawless Dharma, not expounding upon error is called the precept of not speaking of the faults of others. So expounding is sort of like this, standing up on the corner, on the street corner, and announcing, Johnny took my pencil or something. This is very, very bad. So it's really based on, as all of these are, and it's helpful to, as we go through them, to think about it in terms of separation. Separation and non-separation. Most of our suffering comes from the sense of having been separated or being separated. We're far apart from the ones we love, or they don't understand me, or they did some bad thing to me. And so then we separate ourselves from the pain of those things and lose the reality, lose our reality. In separation, we're living in a dream. It's only when we've let down the walls and opened up to the connection that we are and allow that, trust it, that we don't have to suffer in the same way. So, literally, it's supposed, according to this, is not overvaluing the self and devaluing others. Coben said, always the mind sets acts to put yourself high and others low. In Buddha mind, there is no such activity. This scale is always level. There are no others. There is no self. Others are self, and self is other. So to do this weighing job is impossible. We did a very interesting exercise in SPOT in which the students were asked to notice how they relate with people. And the people that they were in awe of, where they felt very small and insignificant, and where they felt really important, and realized that it was all based on absolutely nothing except just their own notion of high and low. So I would suggest that that could be part of the exercise of this precept, and just to notice when you figure that you're top dog in a situation, and others when you're a little bit shy and maybe a little awestruck. The truth is, there is no difference. There is no separation. But we live as if there is. And some of us, when we feel very small, we kind of specialize in smallness. And that itself becomes a kind of self-deprecation, becomes a kind of exalting of oneself. Oh, I'm so small, I'm so bad that this is me. So all of those kinds of measurings are very natural and normal, but well worth noticing in us. So I don't know if there's more to say about the last week's abusing of drugs and alcohol and et cetera, et cetera. I've forgotten how it's said. Illusory words. I like that. The wine of delusion. The wine of delusion. Illusion. Or we can go on to this next one.
Well, I'm ready to go on to the next one. No dwelling on past mistakes. Usually the mistakes involve other people, and sometimes they dwell on them. They may have been more affected by them than you.
Yeah.
So you do have to revisit it when they bring it up.
Yes, sometimes it's a shock. You know, you have no idea that it has the same, it has a different meaning to them than it has to you. The best part is that if we're able to be honest with each other, then we can bring it up and clear it up and be done with it. But if you're too afraid, if people are too afraid to address some kind of dissonance between each other, then it can go on for a whole generation. You know, brothers and sisters can stop speaking to each other and just fail to speak to each other until they're 90 years old and finally die. So that's part of the anguish of our life when we aren't quite straight with ourselves. And it's why we practice, because it takes some courage to be straight in that way. It takes a lot of courage sometimes. Yeah. Jeffrey?
I would say that our practice gives us the tools and skills to deal with those things which my own life experience tells me for others is very painful, and people go to their deathbeds with these things, and I'm so grateful for a practice that gives me those kinds of that kind of understanding that this, you know, we're responsible for our own minds and hearts, and this gives us that opportunity to, that's what I find meditation. If you shine the light within, then these kinds of things are the things that you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're in that situation that you were just describing, been there, and trying to imagine that moment without what I've learned from that, how to sit with it. When somebody brings up something specifically that I may have done, how I can choose to face that or pretend that it didn't happen, all the myriad of choices one has, but when one is really trying to be as honest and authentic and sincere and truth with themselves, it seems to me it's the best part about the practice, because you can actually be with who you really are, who you know, that all those painful things you may have done when you were younger. And when you get older, you have this opportunity to be a kind of person that will look at those things very truthfully right up to the end.
Yeah.
So it's a very, I find that this precept is very important, and one that, you know, is one that we face all the time with, especially, you know, those who are close to us, our family members, people who we've established a long relationships with. So we have a, you know, a long story with.
Yes. Yes. Donald Lynn?
This one and the next one, how you were, you know, saying how they kind of turn over each other. My experience with a few sanghas or Zen groups is that oftentimes these precepts can be interpreted of so literally that problems don't arise that maybe could be addressed. It sounds kind of funny because, you know, it's this whole the paradox or dichotomy, living in the moment, but if something unethical or immoral or hurtful happened in the past, how to work through it. An example that comes to my mind is when I was elected to the board of Jokoji years ago, and very unfamiliar with this, you know, how things worked. I mean, I saw on a piece of paper, you know, how things are supposed to work, but we don't know how things work. So I was interviewing everybody on the board and talking to who was living up there at the time, and you know, the people love to talk and stuff, and that you get to, there were some issues that you could tell that they just, you know, they were kind of like going, you know, like they wanted to say something, but nobody said anything. And it was really interesting. My background, too, is in some organizational effectiveness stuff. And it's, again, that fine line of these two, of saying what they know or saying what has happened, and not bragging or not making it like they're pointing fingers at somebody. So a lot of people, in keeping the precepts, they thought was just to say nothing. And I think conversely, something like what happened at Richard Baker up at the Zen Center is the extreme of what could happen, I believe. Of, you know, you may see the shoes outside the door, but you're not saying anything. Oh, you know. And it's a very, I find it very interesting, and I think because, like Jeffrey was saying, that we are aware of it, I think sometimes it's almost taken kind of like on the other side a little bit more. Does that make sense at all, what I'm trying to,
no,
to say with that?
No.
So it's,
it's another kind of abuse.
Yeah, it's a very, it's just very, I think it was with you, I mean, really, again, in the practice of just going back, well, if I say this, what's the purpose of saying this? Is this to help to resolve a bigger problem, or is this to make me not wrong, or is this to make me a hero, you know, this type of thing.
But
it was really interesting. I would find myself telling people, I just say it, I'm not going to do anything with it. I'll probably forget it in 10 minutes anyway. But, you know, just tell me what, you know.
Yeah, what's on your mind. Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing. Our vows, our first vows, was a body, mind, and speech. And it's always the first, taking the precepts the first time, it's just, it's the ritual, but on how we say it through our, you know, what we say in our minds, how we show it in our bodies, we take the actions, but again, it's this mouth thing that gets us in trouble.
It is tricky. Yeah.
But even here in our Sangha, too, I think there's been a few things that over the years we don't want to say something. That, it's also has to do with the right forum, or who can you talk to about? So it's all very nice.
Well, larger sanghas have whole committees set up for that. So that if there is a problem, you can go to the committee and get it sorted out. The women who went to Japan 20 years ago, 12 women from the Bay Area, and of course there were all kinds of issues that came up, and it was very interesting. The solving of those issues took coming together and actually meeting face-to-face and bringing up the things that people were afraid to talk about. And Blanche would assign a couple of us to be the witnesses and then hear whatever the problem was. And that helped. And I think that always helps. It takes sometimes somebody else's view and mind to see through whatever's going on and be able to express it. I remember when I was having a terrible time with one of my children. After he was grown, he'd moved back home, and I had a lot of issues about that. I really hadn't expected it, and I absolutely didn't want it, and it was happening anyway, and I had all these reasons why. And I went to a counselor. I only saw him once, but he heard my story, the whole long story, that my son did this and this and this and blah, 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 blah. And he looked at me and he said, "And what are you getting out of this?" Oh, I see. I'm making up this whole story and cooking up something that is to my advantage only. And I hadn't actually turned it around and looked at my son very clearly or carefully at all. So, and I was getting something out of it. I was getting to be high and mighty and absolutely correct in every way. So, which is usually the way with this one. You know, that's what we want, is always to not have made a mistake. Always to be right. And we're usually often not. Often not. There isn't any real right. There's just this stumbling through as best we can. This says 2:30. I thought it was my eyes, but no, it says 2:30. Is there a time that's real?
This clock says
8:53. 8:53.
Well, so change what? It's 7:53.
Okay.
We don't know how to. This doesn't go on daylight savings.
I see. Just carry it along the way it is. Yeah. That works.